This is Talk of Asian Marketing with a special emphasis on localized Chinese consumer behavior.
Welcome to Talk of Asian Marketing. It's really good to be here with you again today. We're back in our normal location. That is me, James Stanworth, down in Tainan, and Clyde up in Taizong. Hi, Clyde. How are you doing?
Ah, great, James. Feeling really good, and it's a beautiful day outside. I don't know if you noticed, since we're stuck inside.
That's right. I know. In fact, the temperature is just starting to rise up again. I'm kind of starting to get on my summer clothes again and really feeling that I'm out in the tropics. Winter seems to be passing into a sort of distant memory here.
Yeah, I think I've got to go over to Carrefour and get some of those vacuum bags to put away all our winter blankets and clothes.
I know. I was cursing today. I saw we'd got way more summer clothes. I think my wife has hidden half of them away in those vacuum packs. They're so good. So I'm sweating a little bit here. But I'm sure some of our listeners maybe who are over in Canada and other parts of the globe are wishing they were here. So we can't complain too much.
No, and we just came back from Shanghai where it was definitely on the cool side.
It was. So I'm real happy to be here. And today we're talking about one of those really sort of almost everyday parts of our lives. I know that you've had a lot of experience of traveling up and down Taiwan. I think I'm slowly catching you up in terms of, rather than air miles, train miles.
Train miles.
So we both experience of moving up and down, in fact, from Taizong to Tainan, and me from Tainan up to Changhua. So we're both pretty much the train warriors. Many hours on the train, many experiences of using that form of transport. And really, I have to say, it is so convenient. People say to me, don't you find it troublesome to travel on the train? And I have to say, in Taiwan, it's very smooth generally. You get on the train, it's a very comfortable kind of environment. I pop open my notebook and I get at least an hour and a half of real great productivity. I'm sure you must have had that kind of experience too, Clyde, since, as I say, you've sat in the train, you've been in the train for so many hours.
Yeah, I think it was in 1997 I started using the train regularly, and that would be like 2-3, sometimes more times a week to go halfway down the island. And I think, you know, every country has trains, but I'm not sure in the UK, but in the US they've scaled things back so much, it's just very inconvenient and costly. So it's really great to be in Taiwan and have a really reasonable price. I could go from Taichung, which is in central Taiwan, to the south in Tainan, an hour and a half to 2 hour train ride, and I think it would cost me, what was that, under 700 NT, so maybe about 20 US dollars for a round trip ticket. Very reasonable and always smooth. I don't ever remember being stuck somewhere or having a really bad experience.
Yeah, I have to say, I've used the train for two years now, and that's twice weekly trips up and down. And there's only been once where the train has actually physically broken down. And we're on the platform, I think, for all of maybe 20 minutes or so. Another train rolled in, and we were on that, and we were off. So it was a minimum kind of inconvenience, and it was solved very, very quickly. And when we're thinking of the delays, other inconveniences you often experience, well, the longest delay I've had was, to my good luck, I missed the train, and it turned out that there was the longest delay I've ever had. And that was, I think, a 20-minute delay again on a train coming into my platform on Changhua. When the train came in, it was perfect because I was just arriving and I popped right on that late train. But normally, the trains are within 4 or 5 minutes of their stated time, which is really good, very smooth. and you just jump on the train. So
yeah, I don't think anyone would say it's like Switzerland and the trains are always on time. I would never say that.
Yes, I remember the Swiss. I think Swatch might have made a bit of a coup there. I seem to remember when they part subsidized issuing of watches to all train drivers to push for that super punctuality. So it doesn't run quite like a Swiss watch, but it's close enough that you don't feel majorly inconvenienced by some of those little short delays. And it's all very clear what's going on. So very, very good, very impressive. And the thing that brought it home to me about how well it works was talking to students here from some other parts of the Far East, and they were saying that things that they've experienced back home in their Far Eastern countries are the lack of infrastructure in the way of railway, in the way of trains, and how inconvenient that really is. And personally, I remember going to Thailand, we were on a short kind of holiday vacation, my wife and I, and we got on a train in Bangkok. We were going up to the northern city of the major northern capital city, Chiang Mai. And as we headed up there on the train, I looked out and I was looking for the other tracks. You know, this is the main north-south route in the whole country. And I realized there was only the track that we were traveling on. And it really brought home to me how good that kind of rail infrastructure is in Taiwan, where there's many trains, there's many railway lines, and it really is like that backbone of transportation in Taiwan. It really makes travel, business, and so on really efficient here.
Well, I think a lot of people get used to using the train in Taiwan when they're young because they're students. And as you know, when you go to junior high school or when you go to high school, you take those exams, and you might not necessarily go to a school nearby. So it's very normal to be on the train in the afternoon or in the morning and see just lots and lots of students. Have you seen lots of those students at the train station, James?
Oh, they're all, they're all over. And as you say, often they're just moving from one city to a suburb or to another small city close by, and they leap on the train and just move up and down, and it's really convenient. And I have to say, sometimes frightening. We'll take a look at some of those photos later on, but you can see some of the trains have these doors that kind of hang open a little bit, and these students sometimes jump on at the last minute. It's an exciting sight to watch.
Yeah, so I think they get socialized in using it, and then when they get older, it's not a problem, and just get really heavy use out of the train in Taiwan. That's what I really like about it. So I've traveled around, and going north, going south, it's all very convenient. And I think you and I classify as heavy users. Now, the first thing about a train, of course, is buying the ticket, James. So tell us about buying your ticket. How does that work out before you even go there?
Well, I'm going to go even one stop, as it were, before that, because just for convenience, I jump on my scooter, I go from home, and then I face that normal Taiwan problem, where am I going to park my scooter? And around the station, you find all these great parking lots, real convenient. They're around the Tainan station. There's at least half a dozen I know personally, and there's plenty more in the back streets. And you can see, in fact, in picture one there, you've got a very typical, one of these typical scooter parks, just tucked in around the back of the station. Just drive right in, either... More often than not, you just leave the scooter right there. They give you a little receipt, and then they go and park it for you. And
yeah, you have to remember to leave it unlocked, though.
That's right, yes. I keep trying to remember to do that, because sometimes they let me drive my scooter right into the parking lot, and I have to remember not to lock it up, otherwise they'll really curse me.
Yeah, when you get back, you get yelled at, yeah.
Really convenient. Then it's just a walk across straight into the station.
Yeah, these parking lots are great, James. You know, the picture is so typical. They all look just like this. And I don't know about this specific one, but the ones I've seen is outside there just look like these old shacks that have been there 20, 30 years, all run down tin roofs. But lots of times inside, they've spent money to create these double, triple layer iron frameworks, and they just roll those motorcycles up, and they can pack a lot of motorcycles in these little things, because on the weekend, of course, all the young people at college, university, all come here, dump off their motorcycle, and then go home.
Yeah, for sure. It's amazing, isn't it? You know, these tiny little spaces, and they just cram the cram them full of stuff. And it's, I mean, the price is not super cheap, but it's not expensive. It's like a mid-price kind of thing you're talking about.
Well, here
about.
I see this sign's $30 a day. Usually on weekends, there's a higher price, isn't there?
There is, yes, because I got stung with that once, and I wondered why it charged me more. So, yeah, it does go up a little bit at the weekend. And, of course, you can leave your bike there for multiple days as well. So it's very, very, very convenient.
That's pretty cheap, though. $30 a day, you're talking less than $1.
Yeah, so it's a fair price. And then, of course, if you're organized, you can buy your ticket online before you go into the train station. I think you've had a fair bit of experience with that, Clyde.
Yeah, well, back in 97 when I started doing this, there were no online purchases, so you had to go down to the train station, which every city has usually one, and it's not very convenient because you have to park somewhere, which you're not allowed to just park anywhere, and you have to run in, stand in line because they are usually busy, or go to one of the machines. And because I was buying these longer tickets, I couldn't go to one of these machines. I'd go to the line. Very troublesome.
In fact, in our picture 3, you can see some of those places for lining up. And, yeah, they have lots of windows, but like you're saying, when it gets really busy, those lines build up, don't they?
Yeah, this picture is a real slow time, and it's very normal that there's lines just in every window going out the door of the station. So it was very troublesome. Then I think in about 98, late 98, they started a program where you could order your ticket online, or what's called reserve it. And then what you need to do is, which was kind of funny, now stick with me on this, because this one's a bit of one of those tricky service things where you're not really sure where the benefit is. You get online, you reserve, but you need to pick up your ticket at least 48 hours before the departure time. So you reserve it online, but then you end up having to go down to the train station anyway and pick it up, which means standing in line.
Yeah.
So you could have just gone down there and gotten it anyway.
I've been through this loop before, yes, and I struggled to see the benefit, really.
Yeah, right, a little bit tricky. But there was some method in the madness, and what they were doing was slowly rolling the program out. And rather than just dumping the whole program, the E program, because the government in the late 90s started an E emphasis, the whole government in Taiwan's push for total e-documents, e-everything, and this was part of that. So they began that way, and I think it was about a year it went that way. Then they moved up to you could pick your ticket up at a post office, because, of course, the post office are government-run, and the post office are also banks, just like in Japan. So you do a lot of business in the post office, so you can go to the post office and pick up your train ticket that was reserved online, and that's much more convenient because there are post offices nearby.
That makes a whole lot of sense. And the thing that I'm often amazed though is when I experienced this first time, I kind of assumed that I'd take the reference or reservation number and punch it into a ticket machine. But as far as I know, that's not possible.
No, I don't think so. You need to go to one of these places that actually has it. Now, it may be they're beginning now, or I heard they're going to begin soon. You can pick up the tickets at other places, such as 7-Elevens. Now, that would be really convenient, wouldn't it?
It would. Why do they make it so complicated? I don't know, because a machine, to me, would be the most simple option, where you just go and plug in your reservation code, and it just gives you the ticket in the station.
Kind of e-ticketing.
Kind of an e-ticketing, really, yeah.
But even now, if you go to the post office, you still need to pick up before. I think now it's down to 24 hours before. And so you had this window. You could not reserve your ticket more than 2 weeks in advance. And then you had to pick it up at least 3 days before the departure date. So these windows were getting a little bit complex. It's much more flexible now. You can reserve much earlier, and you can pick it up just 24 hours beforehand. But if you don't pick up your ticket and you just go to the train station, you're out of luck.
That's right. But I still struggle really to see the benefit of it, since if you do get a little bit early, you do queue up. Most of the time, you still can just about get a seat. So I have to say, it's kind of, for me, I found it the benefit a little bit uncertain, to be honest.
Well, the key here is to have a secretary.
That's right, but you have to send her to do the running around when she could be doing all sorts of other useful things for you.
I guess so. Sometimes she has some downtime. You might as well give him or her something to do. So you need a secretary or graduate students to help you do this. But yeah, I mean, the great thing is you're always guaranteed a seat. So I could get those. For me, I was always getting it, always have a seat. I would usually leave early in the morning. Seats are not a problem, but usually when I came back, it was rush hour, and that was a little bit of a problem. So this way, I was guaranteed the ticket, guaranteed the seat. And as you know, James, when holidays come, it's really hard to get any tickets or seats at all. So that a little bit advanced reservation was helpful.
Yeah, for sure. During the holiday times, you really have to watch, don't you? After the some of these big festivals, maybe a long weekend, then you think it's all over. But of course, the next day, particularly if you're traveling early, then everyone is on the train. It's unbelievable.
Yeah,
it's not quite like mainland China, but it's getting really, really packed.
Yeah.
So that's the time when you do want to reserve, do want to think a little bit ahead. But most of the time, it's very, very smooth. And worst case scenario, I've had a few times. What I often do is I buy a newspaper in the morning, and worst case scenario, if I don't have a seat, then I just tuck that paper right down a little doorway. And I still keep my productivity up. I sit there like a sort of door-to-door salesman with my laptop on the knee and just carry right on. But that's a rare case, to be honest. That's a rare case.
Yeah, I think
case.
That the great thing about the Taiwan thing is the service is pretty good. The e-ticketing is smooth. I've never had trouble where things have been lost or reservations mixed up. The worst thing that happens is the holidays coming and the webpage gets overloaded and it takes really long time to respond. The service at the station has always been good. And you can miss your train. I don't know how this works in other countries, James, but you can miss your Taiwan train and you can get on a later one as long as you still have a ticket. And you could, as you say, sit in a corner or sit near a door wherever there's space and open up your laptop or take an empty seat. So I've never had trouble with that. The worst that's happened is I think my daughter's with me once and she had a child ticket and they made me pay extra because they said she was over the minimum height of being a child.
Yeah, that raises an interesting point, actually. You walk into the station and somewhere tucked, or often maybe not tucked so obviously in a corner, but they have this height measurement scale. Now, I'm quite sure this could not be done in many other countries. So how do you classify a child?
But
by
height.
Their height. So
I love that. That's so cool.
It's so amazing, isn't it? I mean, it's what they call heightist, I guess, rather than ageist or sexist. So,
well, because you know, so many people would say that they're children. You know, everyone would try to get away with it, and so yeah, they use this height thing. It's a really interesting idea. But anyway, it's been smooth for me. All those years I was doing this when I was studying my PhD, we're talking 4.5 years of torture, but the train was always reliable and smooth. I never had trouble, and I think I only missed the train once, and I only fell asleep and missed my stop once.
Good. I've got some catching up to do. I'm not sure I'm going to catch up, though, with that last one of missing the stop, but a few times it's been close, and I've jumped off the train clutching my bags and my kit and had to pack up on the platform, but I've yet to see the door close and be heading further south to Kaohsiung.
Yeah, so. I did jump on a moving train once. I don't know if I told you this. The train was just pulling out and I had to get back and I jumped on. It's one of those ones. It wasn't the Zizhanghao that has the automatic closing doors. They were opening doors. I jumped on and one of the conductors scolded me. He was quite angry with me. But when he got closer and saw I was a foreigner and I pretended I couldn't speak Chinese, he just yelled at me a little bit and said, "It's dangerous, don't do that again," and then he let me go.
Oh, that's great. Oh, well, I must remember that one as well.
It's always been pretty good service. A place I've seen some of the things change are the smoking situation. James, you know, back in the late 90s, smoking in there was really heavy. It was quite bothersome. It seems like that's improving, and on picture number 5, you have their big no-smoking area sign. In fact, in Taiwan, the law now is no smoking in public areas at all.
That's right. I was really impressed by this because clearly, as in a lot of developing countries, sort of smoking takes a while to sort of reduce. And I mean, I've been coming here at least for vacation plus working now for quite a few years, and I've seen a big, big drop off in the level of smoking here. And this is kind of really the sign for me, as we see in picture five, that governments and authorities start to take it really quite seriously, that you're not supposed to smoke in the station. I don't see any smoking. Occasionally when I'm on the train, someone's obviously sneaked off to the restroom to have a crafty cigarette, and you do smell that. But generally, it's really, really reduced in a big way. So that makes the whole, another part that makes the use of the trains a whole lot more comfortable. You don't have that nasty kind of smoke smell hanging around.
Yeah, much better. And I hope that in the future, China will go this direction too, I hope.
I was surprised when we were there. Noticed a lot of no smoking signs in the public places. So I think that's a sign that issue is kind of being tackled. And I'm sure that the government there must have a sharp eye to a steadily aging population, and the cost of smoking is so high in health terms that they must be keen to avoid that kind of problem, or reduce it, mitigate it as much as they can. I have to say, the other thing that is great when you get to the train station is you need a newspaper, you need your breakfast, you need anything, right there, there's 7-Eleven. And we see that in picture 8, well positioned to pass the passing traffic, great footfall. And on the right side in that photo, you can see this new city cafe that's just swept through the 7-Eleven. These guys are really prolific with their innovations, and they sell a good cup of coffee there. So if you're feeling a bit sleepy in the morning, you can grab a cup of coffee, jump right on the train. So very, very convenient.
Yeah, this has been a nice change. A lot of the stations had these kind of sleepy station restaurants, and I would never see many people in there, and it's not something I was attracted to. Kind of like those airport restaurants, you know it's going to be overpriced, you're not sure who would go there. And now I think almost all the stations have moved over to the 7-Elevens, either small, sometimes you have micro stand 7-Elevens, sometimes whole stores in the station or right outside the station. Very, very convenient.
So it exactly, it makes, and it's another part of the way that whole service process really fits together so nicely. And another little detail, of course, is you've got your ticket, and in picture 10 we can see there that if you need to reclaim money from your business, it's kind of an expense. And as you go through the ticket stand, the ticket check, after you've made your journey, you just stamp that. They've got all the stamp just right there. So again, very convenient. You can just take that right back, give it to your secretary.
Yeah, this is a bit of a hangover. I don't know how you feel, but this is one area I think that the train company can improve on, and that's this throwback. They're still using hand-collected tickets. You still have people checking by hand your tickets when you walk in. There's not automatic machines. I don't know if it's an employment problem. They just have to keep full employment up, or they can't let people go yet, or they can't get enough early retirement out of these guys. But this frustrates me a little bit. You go in, your ticket's still hand-checked, and when you go out, they do have this convenience, of course, because Taiwan is, as in Hong Kong and China, you know, everyone's doing business. So your ticket usually gets collected, but if you need to return it to your company for reimbursement, they have this little chop, very Chinese chop, and you chop your ticket. And when you get back to your organization, you need to show your ticket has been chopped, meaning you exited the station, and they let you keep that. You need to show it if somebody tries to stop you. But that's one area of improvement. And some of my students were talking to managers over there, and they said they're going to be working on this, where you have an electronic check-in, check-out, kind of like the high-speed rail.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense, because they've gone through a few iterations. Of course, you can buy your single, your return ticket, but they're all paper-based. Then for some time, they started to sell like books of tickets, so you just rip one out for each of your journeys. And of course, there's over 30% reduction for buying a ticket book. The only problem with that was that they were fairly easy to lose, so they moved on to the magnetic ticket, which then you just push through the machine, and that's like a self-automatic check.
Yeah, I think a lot of students get those. If you're a regular user, you can get one of those automatic ones, and there's three or four lines dedicated to going out of the station if you have an electronic one.
That's it, yeah. Lots of the students, I get one because they're just real convenient, but they have absolutely no security on them, like the ticket books. You lose it, it's gone, and you're going to spend really quite a lot of dollars on one of those tickets. So it's a little bit troublesome, I have to say, that there's no security. They don't line that up in their records with your name. So if it happens to get misplaced, then you can't just ask them to cancel and refund that to you. So I've lost a couple of the paper books before. Luckily, they only had a couple of tickets in there, but there was no way of getting those back. And so I have to say that also is a little detailed, but it's rather important because they are just like a single piece of cardboard. So yeah. If you'd happen to buy a ticket book for like $8,000, that's roughly what mine costs, then you have your wallet, say, stolen the next day, then you've just lost $8,000 pretty much. So very a little bit inconvenient. I have to say they could tighten that up so that they could, like with a credit card, you can just call them up and stop it, and they could do something like that because each ticket has a individual ID. So that seems some little thing that they could work on, because from a customer point of view, it's desperately inconvenient, I have to say.
James, but I see you got your taxis lined up here in picture 12 when you come out of the station.
That's right. Those guys are waiting. They're usually there to hassle you, give you a little bit of a soft sell as you're coming out. They're a little wall of taxi drivers. So if you happen to want a taxi, you're in a different place from where you park your scooter, these guys are right there and they'll zip you off. Very convenient. Most of them there are fairly fair. They know the city. You can get in, you can get them to zip you off to your destination. So good guys. They make the life pretty easy if you're needing to pick up a cab on the way out. A little part that also I picked up in some of our photos here. Sorry, the order isn't completely smooth, but if we spool down to picture 20, we can see there's an example of a ticket, and in fact, there's a ticket chart that we just talked about on there. That's visible on that photo. And then we've got the other bits of information that really nice and useful once you get onto the platform. You can see we've got 1020 there. That's the ID for the train. And then a 7 and a 06. So that tells us that's carriage 7, seat 06. And it even gives the departure time and arrival time of the train there. So that's reasonably obvious. In the Chinese characters on the left there, we've got Tainan to Taizong. So you can see that, but of course that's in Chinese, so it's not quite 100% convenient. And then going back up to pictures 13 through to 18, this is the really nice part, that even if you're not reading a lot of Chinese, you can see how everything maps together with your tickets. They have on the platform there number 2, so you just match up your carriage number to the position on the platform, so you can go and start to queue up. Once the train stops, each carriage is visibly numbered, so it's real nice and easy. You can figure out your carriage. And then the door numbers as well show you, just by each door, the seating number, so you can get to the front or the back of the carriage according to whatever your ticket shows. And they do quite a nice job with the Chinese and the English. They've got the destination on the side of the train there. You can see that in pictures 19 and 20. So you know whether you're heading off in the right direction. And you can confirm quickly the train number as well. So we can see that's 11:56. So for the ticket we've got.
Yeah, I would say it's not a disaster. Thing. These things have been added piecemeal. I think it's gone completely from a local system. They've tried to internationalize. I wish they could get the service system more integrated, but that's for the future, I suppose. It's piece by piece slowly being improved.
Yes, I mean, the ticket takes a little time to get familiar with, but once you figure out those pieces, like the train number and the carriage and the seat number, then there's a delivery system, kind of a system for using the train. It is very, 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 very smooth, because you can really, without needing to ask someone, you can make sure that you're lining everything up in terms of getting the right train and getting your right seat. And as we jump forward another photo, we can see there, after those photos on the sides of the train, we see this mass of people In photo 14 there, and photo 21, you can see for a local train, this huge volume of people that's just cramming to get on the train. And it's just really super popular. And
yeah, local trains meaning going in between small cities or small towns.
That's it. And again, another nice part of the delivery system that I've really appreciated is we can see 26, you've got those nice overhead gantry signs left and right. They're showing the destination, the times, and so on, both in Chinese and English. So they repeat nice intervals, easy to use, smooth, and you're able to find where you want to go. The other thing that struck me is the huge number, or fairly large number, of varieties of trains. We've got the high-speed train. We've got, or I should say, the fast train. We've got the slow train and the very, very local train. And we can see some of those in page pictures 27, 28, 29.
Yeah, as well as different lines. You have your coastal line, your mountain line.
Yeah, if you had that problem, Clyde, I jumped on a train once thinking I'm going to head up to Taizong, but I need to jump off at Changhua. I need to realize that because I'm on the mountain, not the coastline, it isn't going to stop where I hoped it was going to stop.
Yeah, this is troublesome. I've often been able to get help from the ticket guys who remind me, oh, this train on Saturday is running this coastal line, not the mountain line, because they switch them around on weekends or busy times. But no, I never actually got on the wrong one, although I have missed. I did get on one train once that didn't stop at Taizong, and I had to go past Taizong. That was a bit of trouble.
Yeah, so that's one thing that just have to keep a little bit of an eye out, because if you get on the wrong one, then you're not going to get the kind of intermediate stop.
Yeah, and I don't think, you know, I can't remember seeing, you know, you don't see really good maps in the stations. You don't see you don't see printed maps that are really clear. They do have schedules, but those schedules are so complex and hard to follow. You don't see like an electronic map that kind of has flashing dots to show where different trains are going. I think there's lots of room for improvement on the communication side.
Yes, absolutely. After our experience of traveling through those other bits of the Far East recently, you can see that they could make some of that timetable and so on a whole lot easier to use. You get these really complex schedules. In fact, one of our photos early on, one of our early photos shows, in picture four, in fact, shows the train timetable. It's really, it's not user-friendly at all, whether you're local or whether you're a foreigner trying to figure out how to navigate the system.
Yeah, I think Chinese doesn't help, but the locals have lots of trouble with these tables too. So this is one area I really think a lot of improvement could be made on the service side and the delivery. And I don't think you and I are the only people to make a mistake.
No. I've heard locals as well and watched locals trying to figure it out. So it's not good, because obviously it's not great for the customer in terms of figuring out their journey plan. And clearly the staff also must get quite bugged with lots of people asking what could be pretty unnecessary kind of questions. Well, another claim to fame for the Taiwan Rail Service is what we see in picture 42 and the next few photos after that, which is the new bullet train, which is really, very impressive, very smooth, and takes you from the south to the north. I think the fastest one is less than 2 hours, isn't it, Clyde?
Yeah, that's right. It's really fast.
So very, very impressive. You can see a few photos of that bullet train here, 45. I couldn't resist getting a shot of me stroking this fantastic train, and a couple of shots inside the train. We've got 47 there. You get a great cup of coffee in the train from the hostess, and that makes that journey really nice, comfortable, and smooth. And thinking of refreshments, when I'm on the regular train going up and down from Tainan, Changhua, making that trip, I often have the guy coming by with the bin ban and other snacks and refreshments. And the thing that surprised me is not finding a big, like, restaurant car, a big eating car. But you, I think, have had some experience with that, Clyde.
Yeah, the last couple of pictures we have here, actually a couple of photos I grabbed of the restaurant car, the dining car, whatever you want to call it, that was attached. And this I think it's standard on the train that goes all the way around the island to the east side of the island to Hualien. And that's a long trip. And so they have a dining car attached. But this dining car occasionally is attached on the regular high-speed trains that go up, the fast trains, what they call, that go up and down on the west coast. And I took these pictures, but it wasn't functional. I've never seen them working. Although if people don't have seats, they'd like to crowd in here and stand around the little tables. So I think that would be an interesting addition because, as you say, they only have those little carts being pushed around, kind of like on an airplane. And it would be nice to be able to go and get something a little bit more variety, maybe some coffee or something. But on a Taiwan train, the standard fare is bandung and some juices and maybe some Cokes.
Yes, it's pretty standard. I've never seen this dining car, so the photos here are a shot of this mystery beast for me and many of our viewers and listeners. So if you see one, it's a rarity. Great. Well, Clyde, I think we've covered quite a lot here in terms of a quick overview of our experiences of Tainan train travel, given a little bit of insight here into the fact that there's a whole variety of trains and that in terms of getting on and using the systems, then once you've done it a few times, you start to get familiar, you sort of figure out how to do it. But certainly there's a certain amount of improvement on communication that would really help customers existing and new. So any final thoughts before we close on this one?
Yeah, I see the train experience in Taiwan as being from the beginning to the end, a kind of service delivery package. And I think where the company has fallen down is that they need to unite that package from the beginning to the end a little bit better. Piecemeal, it's been improved from the time you look up the schedule online until the time you're walking out of the station and including your parking or getting a taxi. If this could all be unified a bit, get a little bit more of a kind of a service blueprint, James, you know what I'm talking about, where we have a beginning to the end and how it links up with the behind the office servers and things like that to make the whole experience a little bit smoother. I think they'd have a real winner on their hands. Right now, you've got really clean trains, on-time schedules, pretty good service, helpful employees, although not, you know, they don't go way out of their way, but they certainly have improved over the last 15 years. If you could just tie it together a little bit tighter and then include that communication in there, nice clear maps, better, easier to understand timetables, I think this would be a really nice system.
Absolutely. Yes, I think you've just really hit the nail on the head there that as a whole set of components, they all work well, but as an integrated whole where customers, which is of course is how we all experience that, you've got to get your ticket, you want an experience on the train, you want that post experience to work well, and for the company really to understand all your needs and make it real smooth, like the problems with the tickets and losing tickets and buying those passes and so on and navigating the system. If they could just make lots of small improvements all the way across all those little areas, then the thing would take the whole train experience would take a massive, if you like, performance improvement from the customer's point of view. So we're not talking getting one thing a whole lot better. We're talking really just improving all these little areas in a small amount, and then the whole experience would really take a magnificent leap forward kind of thing.
Yeah, so, the total service experience would really change.
It would. As I say, very functional now, but it could really rocket ahead with those kind of improvements. So great stuff. I'm really happy to experience it. I think you are too, Clyde. So in some of our subsequent shows, we'll be coming back to talk about transportation.
We're going to have a special show just on the high-speed rail.
That's right. We just touched on it there. We just gave a little sneak preview, if you like. So we'll be spending a whole lot more time on that in one of our next shows. Really looking forward to that.
Okay, James, happy traveling.
You too. See you.
This is Talk of Asian Marketing with a special emphasis on localized Chinese consumer behavior. Meow.
Thank you.